We review last week in chapter 9, after the flood, Noah found himself drunk. One of his sons discovered him and was not very respectful. The other two were very respectful. And when Noah woke from his wine and knew what his youngest son had done to him, he said, "Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants he shall be to his brothers." He also said, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, and let Canaan be his servant also. May God enlarge Japheth, and let him dwell in the tents of Shem, and let Canaan be his servant." So we see here that it was a curse. Did God have to follow the curse that Noah said? It was actually a prophecy, because that was God's plan, that the nations, that the, through the family of Noah, the nations would be divided and spend some time following these directives. And now in chapter 10, we begin with, "These are the generations of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Sons were born to them after the flood." If you would, please go with me for a moment of prayer as we begin. So, genealogy.com, everybody's into that. So here we are. I'm gonna read this. I hope it won't take too long. I've tried to format it. I've not skipped any words. I've just tried to display it so it's easier to see as you hear it. The sons of Japheth: Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshesh, and Teras. Then some of the grandsons, the sons of Gomer, were Ashkenaz, Riphath, and Togarmah. The sons of Javan were Elisha, Tarshish, Kittim, and Dodanim. From these, the coastland people spread in their lands, each with his own language by their clans, and in their nations. Now that's Japheth, one of the sons of Noah. The sons of Ham: Cush, Egypt, Put, and Canaan. So there are four sons mentioned of Ham. Now not all the sons will have grandsons mentioned. The sons of Cush were Seba, Havilah, Sabta, Rama, and Sabdica. The sons of Rama were Sheba and Dedan. Cush fathered Nimrod. He was the first on the earth to be a mighty man. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore he said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, Erech, Akkad, and Calneh in the land of Shinar. From that land he went into Assyria and built Nineveh, Reboth, Calah, and Rezin, between Nineveh and Calah, that is the great city. Another son of Ham was Egypt. He fathered Ludim, Anamim, and Lehabim, and Naphtahim, Parthasim, Calcahim, from whom the Philistines came, and Kaphtorim. We're continuing now with Ham. We didn't have anything about the sons of Put, but here Canaan has a large section. And if you're saying Canaan, right after a son of Noah, and you're thinking Canaan lands, there's a reason for that. These are peoples who would have occupied that area. Canaan fathered Sidon. Yes, that's the same Sidon as Tyre and Sidon that Jesus visited and commented about. If the things done here were done in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented. Sidon, his firstborn, in Heth, and the Jebusites, and the Amuzites, and the Girgasites, the Hivites, the Arkites, the Sinites, the Ardavites, the Zemarites, and the Hamathites. Do those things sound familiar? Those were the sons of Canaan, who was the son of Noah. And the territory of the Canaanites extended from Sidon to the district of Gerar as far as Gaza, and in the direction of Sodom, Gomorrah, Adam, and Zebulun, and as far as Lasha. These are the sons of Ham, by their clans, their languages, their lands, and their nations. So, as I'm reading this, I'm sure you're getting the full effect. So, now to the sons of Shem. Shem is a special one of Noah's sons. Shem is the one to whom the promises continued to go down to Abraham. To Shem also, the father of the children of Eber, the elder brother of Japheth, children were born. The sons of Shem, Ben, Asher, Arpachshad, Lud, and Aram. Arpachshad is highlighted there because that is the lineage of Christ, the lineage of David, the lineage of Abraham. The sons of Aram were Uz, Hul, Gether, and Mesh. Arpachshad fathered Shelah, and Shelah fathered Eber. All the highlighted names again are in the genealogy of Christ. To Eber were born two sons. The name of the one was Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided. Thank you. Peleg means divided. That's, as far as I know, that's why that comment is thrown in there. And Joktan. Joktan fathered Almadad, Shelath, Hazarmeth, Jerah, Hederim, Uzzel, Diklah, Abal, Abimel, Sheba, Obar, Havilah, and Jobab. All these were the sons of Joktan. The territory which they lived extended from Mesha in the direction of Sepher to the hill country of the east. These are the sons of Shem by their clans, their languages, their lands, and their nations. These are the clans, and this is the wrapping up all the genealogy. These are the clans of the sons of Noah, according to the genealogies in their nations. And from these nations spread abroad the earth after the flood. That's what we're supposed to grab out of all those names and places. That this is the beginning of civilization after the earth was destroyed. As we look back over what we've been doing here, the chart that no doubt you've seen, the four great events of the first 11 chapters of Genesis is the creation, the fall of man, the flood, and what we're talking about this week and next week, the rebellion. And Babel, the Tower of Babel. In preface to this, Wiersbe writes, the chapter is known as the Table of Nations and is unique in the annals of ancient history. The purpose of the chapter is given at the beginning to explain how the earth was repopulated after the flood by the descendants of the three sons of Noah. Dr. William Albright is an archaeologist, and he says, the Table of Nations in Genesis 10, it stands absolutely alone in ancient literature. It's not talking about the Bible, it's talking about ancient literature, without a remote parallel, even among the Greeks, where we find the closest approach to a distribution of peoples in a genealogical framework. The Table of Nations remains an astonishingly accurate document. And that's how that fits into our theme this year. Are there outside proofs about the Bible? This is a very ancient document, and it has very historical implications that are valid. Did you see some nations or peoples that you've heard of in that list of people and places? Does anybody want to mention them? I can mention some that come to me. One of the first ones was Magog. I thought that was such an interesting sounding name when I read Revelation. Og and Magog. One of the sons of Jephthah. And Og was the prince of the country of Magog. And you may have seen Gomer. That attracted my attention. There was one of the prophets who had a wife named Gomer. Female. But this is one of the sons of Jephthah. And his descendants may have been the Germans. Alan?
We did a very good job announcing.
Well, I didn't trip up on him, but I promise you I didn't say him right. No. I see the name Medai, which sounds like the Medes. And in college, if you study world history, you'll talk about the Medes. Darius the Mede and Cyrus the Persian will be part of world history. When I see Asher, I think of Assyria. It sounds like Assyrian. It is the beginning of Assyria. Nimrod. How many of you, like me, heard the name Nimrod on Saturday morning cartoons? Bugs Bunny would call Elmer Fudd the little Nimrod. And it's been used a number of ways, but Nimrod, as you may have heard mentioned, was a mighty hunter. He was a conqueror. We know the word Canaan very well if we come to Bible classes. We know the cities Babel, Nineveh, Assyria, and Shinar. Those are things that come out to me. Here's a abbreviated list of the descendants of Noah. On the left, you see Noah. And then with a cross, this is the lineage of Christ, you see Shem. And then of his sons, you see Arphaxad. So there were more sons listed, but that is abbreviated to make for clarity. In the center, you see Ham. One of his sons were Cush and Mizraim. Mizraim is also Egypt. The Ham descendants of Noah are going to live for a large part in Egypt and in Africa. You see Put and you see Canaan. Canaan doesn't live down in Africa or Arabia. Canaan is going to settle in the Bible lands that we see Jesus and the Israelites living in. What group of people are descended from Noah's son Japheth? Yeah, great. We are. And would you expound on that? Okay. When we finish that in verse 5, it said, with the sons of Japheth, from these coastland people spread their lands, each with his own language by their clans or nations. From these coastland nations, they spread from there. I hope we're all familiar with the Mediterranean Sea. It's a lot different with trying to picture the Persian Gulf, the Black Sea, the Caspian Sea, but the Mediterranean Sea, I hope we're all familiar with that. We know on the south of that is Africa, and to the east of that is what is current day Israel. To the north of that is Spain, Italy, Greece, Turkey. On the north coastline of the Mediterranean is where the sons of Japheth were and spread. Northward up into Europe, into some of Asia. This is a simplified map. Before you see a lot of different things. You see Japheth up here in Europe. On the right, you see Shem. Again, very generalized, simplified map. And in the bottom, you see Ham. The descendants of Noah and Ham. I can see I've got a great problem. It's so hard for me to anticipate time. I apologize greatly, really. The sons of Japheth. This is another map where you can see that the sons of Japheth, the descendants of Japheth, are in green. You see how they are. In that area of Turkey, and I think Armenia, right there's another green one in Greece. There's the boot, right? Italy, and even as far as there is Tarshish. Up here is Europe, where the descendants of Japheth. Henry Morris describes some of those descendants. Gomer was, his descendants were in Crimea, north of the Black Sea, or Germany. Ashkenaz were German Jews, and they're called Ashkenazi, in Scandia. Riphtha was the ancestors of, the Carpathians. That's north of Greece, or northeast of Greece. Togarmah was the Armenians in Germany and Turkey. Magog was the Scythians, north of the Black Sea. Meshesh, it's believed, was a former name of Russia. Tubal, you know there's a city in Russia named Tobolsk. Again, we're mentioning things from 2500 B.C. that have some relevance in real world history. And that's why these were given to us, to give us a place to go for more proof than just belief in Jesus. Proof. Jesus had to prove who he was. We're proving who the Bible is. That's one reason we're doing this. As I mentioned, Madai was the Medes. Tarshish in Spain is as far west as they could go without going to the ocean. Kittim was Cyprus. Those, we're talking about places where Japheth's descendants were. Craig mentioned that these were the Europeans, that's us. We know that we aren't Jewish. Most of us aren't Jewish. In some of the scriptures, Paul contrasts the Jews with the Gentiles. Like Romans, the second one there, Romans 3:29. Is God the God of the Jews only, or is he not the God of the Gentiles also? Yes, the Gentiles also. In other places, Paul contrasts the Jews with the Greeks. Like the verse there, Romans 1 verse 16. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. It's the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes. To the Jew first, and also to the Greek. How does this study help us understand the origins of those references? Well, yeah, Alan. Right. As we discuss these areas, we aren't talking about all the sons of Noah just everywhere. We're talking about divisions. So, early on, there was friction between them. And then there was a natural friction that becomes with being uncomfortable with anybody who's not you. I mean, Paul DeGarmo and I grew up in West Virginia. We're proud mountaineers. We lived along the river. We look across the river. We say, who are those people over there? Buckeyes, they're nuts. We really had a funny feeling about anybody who's from someplace else, right? So it is when Paul talks about Greeks and Gentiles. What do you think about these terms? Jew, Gentile, Greek, barbarian, heathen. What did the Jews think about anybody who wasn't a Jew? And generally they were called Gentiles. Did they think complimentary of them? No. I'm sure there were many Jews with good character. But I heard one thing that's so hard to reflect, to say, that there were some Jews who said that Gentiles were only good for fueling the fires of hell. Isn't that awful? But the Greeks viewed other people that way. Greeks thought they were really something. Anybody who wasn't a Greek, they said, was a barbarian. Well, Rome, we'll accept you. You're okay, little brother, at that time. But those terms, Paul uses them, and this kind of lays the groundwork for why we see them. Paul said, I'm a debtor, or he owed it. It was obligation to preach the gospel to everybody, Greeks and barbarians, he said. The Greeks called other people, but themselves barbarians, but in the apostolic age, the Romans were accepted. Cultured Greeks and the proud Romans looked contempt on all other races. Paul is a debtor to both, must give them all the gospel. Hence, he is so anxious to go to Rome. I tried to accentuate how the divisions of each family were mentioned. From these coastland peoples spread their lands, or each in their lands, their language, their clans, and the nations. And it's listed here and accentuated that it is geographical, dialectical, meaning their language, tribal, meaning their family, and national, meaning the nations that we're eventually going to build out of these places. Which of Noah's sons' descendants are referred to in chapter 10, verses 6 to 20? That would be the descendants of Ham. Excuse me while I ad-lib here, and guess how we should move on. The descendants of Ham here are shown on this map in yellow. You see down in Africa on the bottom left, where it says Africa, that shows the descendants of Ham. As you go to the right there, you see Put. These are names of descendants of Ham and where they eventually lived. You see Cush down around Ethiopia near the bottom right. but not just in Africa, not just in Egypt, but also over in Arabia, up just under the Persian Gulf. Paul Harvey said about the United States, we have war so that we can learn our geography, because then we learn countries we never heard of for a long time at least. The list of names of the sons of Ham, are kind of connected to nations in history. Cush is Ethiopia. Mizraim is Egypt. Put was Libya. Canaan, of course, as we mentioned, the land of the Canaanites. Seba was the Sudan. Havilah, Sabta, and Sabtacha were Arabia. Nibron then was further up northeast of current-day Israel, around the Tigris-Euphrates Valley, and he went to Babylon and Assyria. Sidon was one of the sons, and those were the Phoenicians. Heth was the Hittites, and the various Canaanite tribes are noted also that you would recognize from reading the prophets and their struggles with the peoples around Canaan. The Sinites, it's noticed that Sinology is the study of Chinese history. They may have been further east in Asia. Later in Israel's history, what two peoples from Ham took the northern and later the southern kingdoms in captivity? In 2 Kings 17, verse 6, it says, the king of Assyria captured Samaria. Now we've mentioned Syria twice. Once with Asher, a son of Japheth, I believe, who established Assyria. But we also mentioned Nimrod, who went to Assyria, Nineveh, and Babel. Because Nimrod, later than Nimrod, was a conqueror. He went in and he just took over those places. I apologize, I haven't been looking over here at all. And then, so that's the northern kingdom taken to Assyria. And in 2 Kings 25, verse 1, it mentions Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came and besieged the city. And in verse 11, many people were taken to Babylon. Some deserters and some who had been captured were taken to Babylon. And Babylon, also a city of Nimrod. So it's interesting that Ham was to be, and Canaan especially, was to be servants, but in Israel's history, they were used to punish Israel from these nations of Assyria and Babylon. I must have, John, I'm having a, okay. Pardon? Okay. I do the same thing. Wiersbe summarizes the sons of Ham. The descendants of Ham located in areas we identify today as Egypt, Palestine, the Sudan, Saudi Arabia, and Yemen. The image of Nimrod in the text is not that of just a sportsman hunting game, but of a tyrant, ruthlessly conquering men, establishing an empire. In Genesis 10, verse 10, we see reference to the land of Shinar. According to Daniel 1, verse 2, what major world empire was found in the land of Shinar? Where was Daniel taken captive? Pardon? Babylon. The land of Shinar. These are references in the Table of Nations, then again referenced in Daniel. I'm really wanting to get to Shem real quick. Can't change channels. Can I touch the screen, John? Okay, in Deuteronomy 7, verse 1, there are seven nations listed. We talked about them when we talked about the Girgashites and the Hivites. Those were sons of Canaan. Let's move on. If you notice Shem, his descendants are shown here in purple and violet. And they are not in where Israel is today. They were in that direction, but east of there, as you see the names of Aram and Asher and Mash and between the Persian Gulf and the Mediterranean Sea. You hear the phrase anti-Semitic, that comes from the word Shem. Do you understand a little bit more what that name comes from and what it means? And the anger that has been toward one group of people, as it is in various places to other groups of people. Prejudice is not a good thing, and racism is not a good thing, and certainly not biblical, and not something New Testament Christians should be involved in. So here's a table showing Shem and the descendants of him that go down to Abraham, as you would be concerned about in the latter chapters of Genesis. What is the purpose of recording Noah's family tree? Does it have any bearing on our faith? It gives us factual reasons to believe in the Bible. It gives us reason to follow that we are the family of man that all came from Noah. He had three sons, but all peoples have come from Noah. We're all brothers. There's no difference in us. The Pulmit commentary says it's impossible to exaggerate the importance of this ethnological table, whether regarded from a geographical, a political, or a theocratical standpoint. This unparalleled list, the combined result of reflection and deep research, is no less valuable a historical document than is lasting proof of the brilliant capacity of the Hebrew mind. And they were led by who? They were led by God to do this. And it enables us, in yellow there, enables us to trace the descent of the woman's seed and to mark the fulfillments of scripture prophecy concerning the nations of the earth. From Genesis in the fall and the promises to Adam and Eve and the serpent, here we start to see another connection going in the future. I'd like to mention real quick in a closing thought that we might consider that the three sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, didn't form three races because they had the same parents. But they were three streams of nations. If there's anything we need to be as Christians, is accepting all peoples. So racism is not something you can be as a Christian. In its original form, evolution teaches that races and peoples should compete in dominance, and that only those strong enough to earn the right to live and procreate at the expense of the weak, known as the survival of the fittest. This perverted thinking led to the justification of wholesale slaughter of Jews and countless others deemed inferior. During World War II, Adolf Hitler was so enamored with the evolutionary thought that he was more than willing to risk the lives of Germans in order to assert a view of racial superiority. As far as the Bible is concerned, mankind is not a multiplicity of races, but rather composed of only one, the human race. No less than the Apostle Paul told the pagans in Athens that God made all humans of one blood. He said it, and in verse 17, verse 26, God hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation. Well, I hope that